Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
That's right.
Yeah, it is.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to
another show of Death, a Funny Business.
Hi, it's Becky and Tash. My mum is dead and so is her dad.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And that's all we're here.
Yeah. It's Tuesday and we talk about death and grief and loss and friendship and love and life.
We should do a little video, I think. You saying
of
all those things.
Of me saying all those things. Trailer. You know what? I think people should film me at all times because everything I say is fascinating.
She's actually funnier off camera and off mic.
Do you think that's true?
No. Absolutely not.
Wow. Becky's bringing the reading today. The reading?
So we're going to have a little bit of a chat, but we've got a really exciting guest
today. Yeah, we do.
Today.
We have a real life doctor.
As opposed to a not real doctor.
No, though, I feel
we've never had a doctor.
Have we never had a doctor?
No, I don't think so.
Yasmin, have we ever had a doctor?
No, we haven't.
No,
this is really exciting. So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan, who's an intensive care doctor, has written books about patients who have been brought to life and lessons we can learn from them.
We have had a doctor.
Oh.
We had that lady who looked after people in palliative care. She must have been a doctor.
She was a doctor.
See, I remember
the
things.
The second doctor.
Anyway.
Do you want to intro Matt?
Yeah, Matt is really exciting. Matt is an intensive care doctor and he has written a couple of books about what it's like to experience bringing people back from the brink of death, which is going to be fascinating. And he's written a lot of books and we're going to talk, and he writes a lot of articles and we're going to talk to him about what it's like to be brought back practically from the dead.
Yeah, not that he knows, but as in...
Well, no, but what it's like...
Case studies and stuff.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And his patients.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's coming up. And then a little game.
Yeah, excited about the game. Are you excited about the game?
No, because this time I'm having to be on the other end of things.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
How are you feeling after last week? So, for listeners weren't here last week...
I cried.
She cried.
I did cry. I'm good, actually. Like, I actually think that crying is good for us. And, like, last week was heavy, but it was definitely necessary. And actually, I think that I felt super good after the show and, like, actually had a great week and, like, had therapy and have been processing the vibes.
I was really proud of you for just being so vulnerable and honest. Aww. And... I felt really restricted because I was sitting in this chair really far away from you and I couldn't do anything, but maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those things where, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes you just gotta cry.
Yeah, but I mean, and you know, and that's what our guest last week was saying, and that we need to just be able to, you know, cry and not apologise for it. And that's exactly what you did. And I think that sometimes... we don't really tap into the sensitivity of death.
No.
And maybe we laugh too much.
Well, I think that there's a level of like us, like clearly we're not morbid, but like we enjoy a good giggle. And I think that there's definitely something like, you know, there's definitely something about like if we don't laugh, we'll cry. But there's also like a level of, yes, this is a very sensitive topic. And sometimes it is going to be a bit more... Mm.
And there needs to be space to laugh about death because I think otherwise it is too uncomfortable for people.
Absolutely.
It becomes such an unapproachable topic. So I think that we need to be able to tackle it with humour.
Absolutely.
But
that's our whole shtick, Becky.
That's why we're here. But having said that, I think it's really good that we both are honest about the reality of things. And I actually, you know... when we're the two of us on our own and having a cup of tea on the sofa and we're not behind these mics.
Yeah, it's a bit dark, isn't it?
It is a little bit more dark because I guess we feel more comfortable talking about things.
Well, there's a level
handedly.
Of... We have to... I mean, look, at the end of the day, there's still going to be a level of privacy that I'd like to keep from the rest of the universe. Y'all can know about, you know, most of my life, but I think we don't need to go into, like, super, super detail sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, there's some things that I'm like, you know what? this is just not to share. A lot of the time it's when it involves other people, I feel like. That's and you don't want to talk about people who are still alive who cause you problems because they are still alive and they will have problems with you talking about them live on the air to like a lot of people. But how are you?
How am I?
Yeah. How has your week been?
I don't know. I don't really know how, you know, all the discussion of like privacy, I don't really know how much I want to go into it.
No, that's absolutely fine.
But then again, I probably should because it's that's why we're here.
So and we're in this together.
Yeah. And I always feel like there's some judgment for it. I am on my grief journey. And I think, like, as I mentioned before, after having stopped working, I feel really, I feel exhausted. I've definitely got, like, burnout. And I'm just processing what's happened in my brain the last 6 years. And it's coming up to 7 years now since Dad died. And I just haven't stopped for 7 years. I feel like I've just been on this crazy ride and like lots of things
This is
happened.
The first time that it feels like it's...
And this is the first time where I've just stopped. Mm. And I think my my brain is trying to process what's happened. And I'm doing therapy. And I feel like I've come such a long way in the last year of therapy. But I am just really struggling to do like daily tasks and functioning and... To be honest, coming here sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can face being so open. And I am here and I'm doing it. But I started taking antidepressants last week.
Welcome to the club.
But I didn't want to take them. And I don't really know how I feel about it. But I feel really weird. Like I started taking them on Thursday and I feel like right now I'm not really here. I feel like I'm in this fog. Mm-hmm. So if I say anything that's a bit weird today.
Might be a bit fumbly today.
That is why.
But that's okay. Do you know what? There's space in the universe for that to be a thing.
Mm.
And as a woman who also takes good old antidepresso medication, it is rough. And anyone who's about to go through, like choosing to go down that route, like the first few weeks, they are a bit dodgy. Like you do feel a bit like it's your body getting used to the new chemicals.
It's exhausted and, like I just don't want to get out of bed.
I mean that makes sense. Like the first 2 weeks you feel worse than I think you do feel better, but then personally my personal journey with them, because I think we're on the same ones, aren't we? Are you on the cert?
No.
Oh, you're not? All right. We don't know. We don't have to disclose our private medical, but I'm on that good sertraline, 50 milligrams every day. And the first 2 weeks, rough. And then, like a dog, just realized. And then, and then one day, I told you this the other day because we were talking about it. And I said, one day I just woke up and I was like, the sun is shining and the tank is clean. And suddenly I feel like I can breathe a little bit and I'm less underwater. And I think that there is a big stigma around taking medication for your mental health. And obviously there's like this big thing. It's like, oh, it's so bad for you. And like, what are you doing? You shouldn't need to do that. Like, blah, blah, blah. There's so many people. And like people who probably like from our older generation, I feel like our generation are getting a bit more like, yeah, everyone's on the antidepressant medication. But like, there shouldn't be a stigma. Like you wouldn't, I mean, this is such a cliche, but you wouldn't reject having a cast put on a broken leg. Mm. So why would you reject getting like,
and I think what's
taking
really,
a little, you need a crutch. And like,
do.
That's a little
and
bit
I am
of what's
like
happening.
Exercising most days, every day, pretty much.
Well, that's
I
great.
I'm like eating well, I'm taking all the vitamins. You know, I feel like I'm doing everything and I'm doing therapy.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just need, supposedly this will just take the edge off things.
Yeah.
But I feel, I don't know why I feel embarrassed about admitting that, but I do.
That's okay.
Because I am okay.
But I think that's society. That's the stigma around it, isn't it? Like at the end of the day, like we've been conditioned to believe that there's something shameful about taking medication like an antidepressant, because there's this historical suggestion that somehow it's weak or that it's lazy, and that is just simply not true. I actually think it's a very active positive thing you can do for yourself, like taking vitamins.
Well, like, I just want to like live my best life, right? And I feel like when I speak to Dr. Matt, not that he probably will comment on antidepressants, but you can if you want, Matt. But I think it's like living your life you know, to the fullest, and like, yeah. And I just want to enjoy it. Like, I might die tomorrow, so I might as well Amen. Try and enjoy living life. And mm-hmm. if that's going to help me,
yeah,
then I'm going to do it. Yeah. But
and like. That was at the void.
I feel really numb.
That's okay. That's okay. And that's all right. Apparently, I'm going to be in charge today, folks. It's going to be interesting.
I did say
everybody, hold on to your breeches. It's time.
I don't know if that makes me more anxious.
probably should do, because I have to read things out loud. And but no, this is the thing. You're saying that, you know, this is the thing. Like, obviously, like, you're feeling a certain way, but you're still you, and like, your instincts kick in for like hosting and doing your life and whatever.
I think I just want to like show up for people. Like, that's something that I'm, I feel like, you know, you have the energy for people, and like, even like yeah. your friends, you're just like, I really do want to see you, but I physically can't even reply to your message.
Yeah,
right
my,
now.
My friends are laughing right now because that is me. It's 24 really hours of the day, 365 days a year. I'm terrible.
It's just hard, and like, I yep. just, and I feel like it's so hard to explain like what's going on inside this brain, because I don't even know what's going on inside this brain. I mean, yesterday I literally just had a bit of a, I was actually just listening to some mindfulness music.
Nice.
And tried to be mindful and then just started crying because I think my brain suddenly had some peace, and I was allowing all these emotions just to come to the surface. Mm. And I was just like, oh, maybe I am quite sad.
Yes, maybe
it's but normally I just try and not think about it and just talk about death in a candid way on here. Mm. And then I've done my grieving because I'm talking about death once a week.
Mm, yeah, but okay, we had this conversation earlier where I was like, you know, we talk about death a lot, and it's a specific subject, isn't it? It's very close to us and it's close to our heart. And yes, we do talk about death here, but we're not processing anything. This is not therapy for me and you. No, like, at the end of the day, like, and I'm not saying that in like a, that's not to be judgmental or whatever, but like, I think there's definitely a level of, like I said to you earlier, I said, we have to make sure that outside of this space that we're taking care of ourselves and putting ourselves first. And if that means that we need to have a cry and we need to like play some mindfulness music and stare into the void, that is yeah. freaking normal. And I think as well, you have to remember, like, in a way, us doing something like this is going to bring those feelings, especially the negative feelings, closer to the surface than they normally would be, because normally we're just going about our lives and we're not confronting this big part of our traumatic existence in the forefront. And in this world we do, like, yeah. on a lot. And like, I mean, I went home like last week and I was like, I'm going to lie down. And
yeah,
like,
we need that. We actually ate a massive pizza first though.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. You have to go into the yeah. dark and wear the udi and, you know, eat the KFC in the darkness. And sometimes that's just how it's going to go. But I also think there's a level of like, even though I was upset, like, for example, even though I was upset last week and I cried, right? I was not like, oh my God, like, how could I be crying? That's crazy. Like, that's awful. Like, why am I like this? It's like, yeah, I'm crying. Mm. Duh.
I know.
It's rough. And like, also,
and I think no.
showing up for people,
oh,
you don't have to do that all the time.
I know, but it's...
I know.
It's like to be there.
I know you
like
do.
To show up, but you have to have energy in yourself to be
yeah,
able to...
Yeah, 100%. And you're and not also, useful to people if you're
Oh, I'm fucking
not,
useless.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you don't want to be around me when I'm in that mood anyway. But also, I think we're both in this sort of like happiness stage in our life too with, I'm going to speak for myself, romantically, in this like love bubble.
Yeah.
I have a boyfriend.
Becky has a boyfriend,
and it's really hard to like balance
a new boyfriend.
Yes,
yeah,
a new boyfriend.
He's lovely. Yes.
And I think that I'm really happy about that, but yeah. then I'm also trying to grieve at the same time. Yeah. And I think that's like that's really yeah. difficult at the moment. And but, I think we're like kind of like balancing that happy, that really those highs with those lows is yeah. just going to take yeah. some time. And I always thought that was going to be easier yes. nearly seven years on, but no.
But I actually think as well, like, romantic relationships can actually bring those feelings to the surface more, similar to like us doing this. It makes you confront yourself a little bit because you're being shown your personality in a mirror a little bit.
Oh my God, that's exactly what it is.
I'm very wise. Sometimes I say things and I'm like, wow. Yeah, no. So you end up kind of having these moments with, especially with a new person. And this is why, like, it's definitely why, like, you become avoidant or you become fearful of romance because you're like, oh my God, I have to run towards the fear.
Yeah.
I, you know, if I want this, but I also like, I could just run away. Mm. These are the conversations I've been having this week. I don't know if you can tell, but,
Which way are you going?
Well, my instinct is to like, when you feel a feeling, like, I'm like, oh, this is lovely. And then I'm like,
Yeah.
That was me, like springing from the microphone.
Yeah. No, I feel you. And also just the terror, like when we've spoken about this before, but like just the being absolutely terrified that something's going to end or something's going to go wrong. For me, it's like, just please don't fucking die. Yeah. Like, just don't do it.
100%.
And but then you ruin the fun bit. So.
Exactly. And also, I've been saying this a lot this week.
Yes.
If we just believe that and we're like, they're just going to die, they're going to leave, we may as well just sack it all off now.
What is the point?
We're going to be so fucking bored for the rest of our lives. So it's all about the balance. It's the pain with the pleasure. Oh, God.
And love is beautiful.
Love is beautiful, man.
Love that, what is that, what do people say? Grief is, you only grieve because you loved or something.
Yeah, that's that if you're grieving them, it means that you love
them.
It's
the love that you can't share or something. Yeah, exactly. But maybe we're going to ask Dr. Matt Morgan to...
He's going to give us some insight into what it's like.
Into living life to the fullest.
Amen.
So shall we go to the break and then...
Yeah, let's do it.
We'll be joined in the studio with Dr. Matt Morgan.
Woo!
See you in a bit, guys.
Bye. Food Bar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
But it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed. All the OGs had gone and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23. Mm. And was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
Death. A funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Every time. Welcome back.
Yes,
to
welcome.
A funny business.
And welcome, Matt.
Thank you.
To the studio.
Hello.
Dr. Matt
Noswaitha in Welsh.
Noswaitha.
You are
like
Welsh.
It.
I thought I detected
Welsh.
An accent.
Yeah, it's true.
Came from Cardiff today.
Oh, yeah, she did say that. I told you, my brain's not working.
Sorry. That is true. Sorry.
And you've joined us with a book.
I've got a blue book with a heart on the front called Second Act, What Nearly Dying Teaches Us About Really Living.
Tell us more. We'd love to know. Where did this book come from? Who are you?
A doctor and an author.
What does it all mean?
I've worked as a doctor for 20 years, mm-hmm. and most of my work is at that weird kind of shoreline between life and death. I work in the intensive care unit where about one in five people will sadly die. But I've long thought that looking after those people who survive, sometimes they say pretty profound things afterwards. And I've long thought these are the people we should be listening to, not business gurus and tech billionaires. You know, they know what's important in life. So I've actually been writing down stuff they've been saying for many years. And then I went to my great auntie's funeral, Auntie Wynne. She was 97. Aww. She lived an extraordinary life. She was in the war rooms, in Winston Churchill's war rooms, and went to her funeral. It was an amazing funeral. Everyone kept saying she would have loved it. You know, favourite people, favourite food. And that's kind of how the book kind of came together. I thought, why not share these stories? So there's 10 people in the book. All of them had a cardiac arrest. All of them nearly died, if you like, from lightning strikes to being buried in an avalanche to suicide, for example, in one case. But they all survived. They all lived through CPR and through intensive care, and I think they can tell us things that will help in our lives, I think.
Definitely. And when it comes to, you know, being what am I trying to say?
I don't know.
Hold on. Let me. This is the problem. Becky is. I'm in charge today, and I'm panicking here.
That's what's happened. That's what's really happened.
I just short-circuited. I'm going to start again. So, tell us a bit more about some of these patients that you and like that you experience. I can't do it.
I think what we want to hear is a case study, and I think what we're really we're really intrigued to kind of hear about the patients and like what their stories are and like what happened to them when they were someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours. Scientifically, how does that work? Like, where did they go?
Yeah, that is wild. So there's 10 patients in the book. About half of them I looked after in the intensive care unit. About half of them are kind of amazing stories, if you like. And the guy you mentioned, Roberto. Roberto is an Italian climber. He lives in Milan. He was climbing with his best friend, Alexandro, in the Dolomites, doing a pretty crazy climb. And the weather was perfect. The weather was great. And then the weather was not perfect. The weather wasn't great. So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm. And his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead. And the reason we say that is because extreme hypothermia, extreme low temperatures can allow you to survive extremes, which is what he survived. So he was rescued by a helicopter. He had 4.5 hours of CPR. He had almost 5 hours of a different crazy therapy where they add oxygen directly to your blood. And he lived. He survived. But Roberto's message, and you know, out of these 10 patients, they've all got kind of a message, if you like, to take home. And his was that although he survived and he's now climbing again, he's a remarkable guy. In fact, he came to the book launch. We were playing drinking games in a local pub afterwards.
I love that.
He outdid me.
I bet he did.
He's cheated, really, I suppose. But so his message was he lost all his memory. So although he survived, he didn't know who he was, where he was, anything.
Oh, wow.
Until until his friend showed him the GoPro footage from the time of when he died. So it was captured on camera. He watched it and literally everything came back at that moment. And for me, nostalgia is so powerful, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't know about you two, but on my phone, I checked before coming into the studio, I've got 17,000 photos. I don't know how many of you
65,000.
Wow. That's a lot. I have like 10,000.
I know. Wow. I like that's to take pictures.
That's a lot. And, you know, there are more photos uploaded to social media every day than heartbeats in a lifetime. There's 3.5 billion photos uploaded every day.
Oh, my God.
But what we don't do, or what I didn't used to do, I do now, is look back at them.
Yeah.
And nostalgia is super powerful, you know, especially in grief, actually, in many ways. So now I still take photos, but when I take them, I committed to look back a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years on that day to old photos. Sometimes people who've died, maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe my kids when they were growing up. And it makes taking a photo almost better because you don't just take it, you look back too. So, you know, that was one pretty powerful message from Roberto.
Mm. Wow. Because I think that we were talking earlier about living life to the fullest, and we often are told how to live your life through like online and like influencers, and that's what I'm constantly being bombarded with. But you having written this book, you sort of saying that actually we should be learning from these people, and like kind of, I don't know, how would you think the best way is to kind of live your life, especially if we are going to die?
Yeah, you know, and the truth is I don't know, you know, if I love you are the most important words in life, probably in medicine the most important words are I don't know. And the truth is this book wasn't written by me almost, it was written by the patients. You know, it's those people who are sharing their stories to help. I guess there's two big things that come through quite a lot. The first is that we actually have two lives, not one. It's just your second begins when you realise you only have one. And I cheat at that, I hack that. You know, every day when I go to work in intensive care, I meet people who are critically ill. I meet people who are sick enough to die.
Mm.
Every time I meet a family, it's normally to give them the worst news of their life. Mm. That's a normal Tuesday for me. And so rather than make me sad, that actually makes me appreciate life. It makes me not worry about the flat tire, the tax bill, the dog who was sick this morning before coming here. You know, I'm not saying I'm never stressed. Of course I am. But it pulls me back. So that's one big message that comes through. I guess the other one, which is important for you guys, is as well as having two lives, we all die twice. We don't die once, we die twice. We die when our body dies, and we die when somebody stops saying our name. And I think in grief, I've learnt a lot through this book. You know, I used to take a step back when someone said, my dad died or my mum died. And now I do the opposite. Rather than say, I'm sorry to hear that, and then cross the street and change the subject, I normally say, what's their name?
I love that so much. God, that's really hit me.
Do you know what? That is one of the biggest questions we've been trying to answer for ages, isn't it? That we've been asking people, what do you say when you...
Yeah.
When
yes, you're right.
That's what we've been asking. We've been saying, what's the right thing to say when someone tells you that they've lost someone? That is the answer, ladies and folks and gentlemen.
You've done it.
I'm in shock. Like, that is the perfect... And actually, this reminds me of our conversation last week with Beth, where we were talking about memory and how actually talking about, you know, asking those questions, what was she like? What was your mum like? What was your dad like? What does that... Yeah, I mean, that's the...
I think so. And so I've done no preparation from this other than two things. Number one, I learnt your names. And number two, I learnt your dad's name, Mark. And I learnt your mum's name, Vanessa. That's the only prep that I've done.
That's lovely.
So I think if you remember nothing, it's you die twice. Once when your body dies, and next when people stop saying your name. My question normally now is, what's their name? Tell me about your mum. What did she love doing? And I guess there's another technique that I sometimes use in breaking bad news that people might find helpful. I break a lot of bad news. And I think in ICU, in intensive care, the intention is always to save a life, but you can't always. Sometimes you need to save a death instead. And families, you know, families remember everything. I went to see... The reason I did intensive care at all is because a boy called Chris, who was 18, he went on a gap year to Kenya. He developed severe infection And he died just a few days after his 19th birthday.
Gosh.
In the intensive care unit in Cardiff. Mm. He blew out candles on the cake and he died six weeks after he developed an infection in Kenya. So that's the reason I did ICU. And his parents, I still remember now, asked the team three questions. Why did he die and others not? Number two, what could you do to save someone else? And the biggest thing they said is, what do we do now? You know, you just have a plastic bag with his slippers and shoes and his birthday candles. What do we do now? And at the time, I didn't know the answer to any of those things. I think I've got a better answer now. And I've done some work for a bereavement charity called To Wish.
Yes.
An incredible charity that supports young people and their families when they die. And now, you know, if I was to see Chris's family again, I'd say speak to To Wish. But I went to see them, actually, for my first book, which is called Critical, which is about intensive care.
Yep.
So I knocked on their door a decade after Chris died. Oh. And that was genuinely, you know, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But it was as if it was an hour later for the family.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
they remembered a fleck of blood on the team's feet that told them the bad news. They remembered the wallpaper. They remembered the smell of the hospital. Mm-hmm. They remembered absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So, I guess the other technique is called the empty chair technique.
Mm.
We've got an empty chair next to us here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when breaking bad news now, the last thing I tend to ask families after going through the story and telling them what's happened, I'll normally say that if the person we were talking about, you know, if Mark or Vanessa, if they were sitting with us here now, and I'll point to the empty chair, what would they say? You know, what would they tell us? What would they tell us about their life? And I think that gives families permission to say things which are hard to say as a wife or as a mum or as a dad. Or, you know, families can never say, oh, he's, you know, they've had enough. Just let them go. Mm-hmm. They can never say that. But if you're talking through somebody, often they'll make a joke. Often they'll say, oh, he'll say, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, or he'll say, I don't own all these machines, just let me die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's often what families will say. Yeah. So I think the empty chair technique is super, super powerful too.
I mean, that's a perfect way of kind of looking at it from the person's perspective. I wonder, for you, how has it been? You know, you said that it was one of the hardest days going back and seeing Chris's family. You said that you deal with grief in a different way and it makes you appreciate life, but how do you kind of carry on coping with that throughout your life as a ICU doctor?
You know, there are sad times. There's something we call, there's those we carry. So there's kind of a collection of people that we carry around with us, so to speak, in families. If I'm honest, I rarely get upset directly about patients. It's families that get me.
Yeah.
It's the people left behind, especially if there's some link to you, and that might feel quite narcissistic in a way. But if, you know, somebody, I remember talking to a little boy who was about 12, same age my daughter at the time.
Was that I don't think that's narcissistic.
Anything close to her. He'd given CPR to his dad and his dad had died.
Oh, wow.
And this little 12-year-old boy, and you know, that really, really got me. You know, not at the time. Mm. There's a little toilet I tend to go into and you know, have a moment in there. But yeah, it's when there's a link, I suppose, is always the thing. But
yeah. And did you find writing a second act like quite cathartic for your kind of journey and like understanding how you cope with grief in your
although career? You know, in a way, this isn't a book about death. This is a book about life. And actually, you know, what you're doing here is so important, because when you're looking for light and good stuff, often you need to look at where the shadows fall to know where the light is coming from. And actually, talking about death doesn't have to be sad.
No.
In fact, towards the end of the book, I wrote these 10 cases. I thought I'd finished. I sent it to the publisher, but there was something missing. And just like a radio show, you know, writing a book is a bit like a jigsaw that only you can fix, or only you can solve. And there was a bit missing. And the bit missing was I kind of wasn't connected to these people. You know, I somehow needed some empathy. So we actually held a living funeral at that time. I wrote to the local vicar. I said, hi, I'd like a funeral. And she said, you normally need to be Christian and dead. Which is a bit awkward.
How was that experience for you? I mean, I know we read about this a little bit, but yeah. how was that experience for you? Because I think we've talked about this a little bit. We talk
both
about our
want
own
living
funerals.
Yeah. Because we want to be able to hear what people are saying about us. And
I think it should be more of a thing culturally.
Yeah.
Culturally, I think that it's so nice to think that people get to know what everyone's going to say about them and like hear those things before they pass. Yes, tell us about your experience.
Yeah, it generally was one of the best days of my life.
Oh. You
know, genuinely. It wasn't just me, so it was a group in the end. There was a group of eight of us. We went to the Pyrenees in a lovely cottage. It was out of season, so there was no skiers there. It was pretty quiet there. We had good food, good music. We used all of the lessons from the book. So each of the 10 patients brought a lesson, like Roberto's photos, and we tried to use those during the service. Mm. We all had a eulogy written. My wife, my mum, my dad, my kids wrote mine. We had a reading. We all had a favourite song. It ended with eight naked men in a hot tub crying, which was... I think the celebrant had never seen that before. I think he needed some counseling,
well,
actually, the celebrant.
Yeah.
But it generally was amazing. And it wasn't actually about... It wasn't just about hearing stuff for you.
Yeah.
The friends I went with, I've known for decades. Yeah. Friends from school. I found out stuff I'd never known about them.
Really?
You know, through listening to a eulogy. Plus, it's an amazing way to reappraise your life, where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, one of my friends listened to the eulogy, which said, he's such a hardworking guy. He's always got his phone with him. He's always got his laptop open.
Mm.
And his wife had written that as a nice thing to write.
Yeah.
Actually, he listened to it and thought, is that me? Is that what I want to be remembered for? So, yeah, I'd encourage...
A little bit holding up that mirror again.
Yeah.
And also, I can imagine being able to bond with your friends and family in a way that you would never never do otherwise. And to really, appreciate and I guess, what go to sleep that night and then wake up the next morning and feel like I'm starting again.
Yeah, yeah, spot on. Yeah. But actually, a lot of us have changed a lot. You know, there's a friend who started some charity work. Someone's taken that trip they've been putting off for years and years. Somebody else has changed careers entirely. Some people have taken up new hobbies. They felt, you know, in the eulogy, that it was pretty hollow. It was just work and that's it, the end. So, yeah, I think everybody should have a funeral before they die.
So is that what you think we should do?
Yeah.
Should we read your book and then we need to, and then have a funeral?
Yeah.
Host a funeral.
I think we should totally do that. Like I said earlier, like, I genuinely think that makes so much more sense than once they're gone. I mean, obviously there's a level of like, yes, once they're gone, it's a moment for like, you know, the friends and family to be together and miss that person once they are gone. But for that person to, like you said, experience that, I mean, you never really experienced that in your life ever.
No.
Where your fam, like, not that you couldn't, but I think that...
Well, I remember when Dad died, that was, I suddenly thought,
yeah,
oh my gosh, life is so precious. And I never really understood what that meant when people said it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as the years have gone on, I've kind of forgotten how precious that is. And it's almost like sometimes I have really intrusive thoughts and I'm like, what if my mum dies? And then suddenly I'm like, oh my God, I need to be reminded that life is precious. And so I think maybe... instead of having those intrusive thoughts, I should host a funeral.
And I think you ask the questions, right? You ask the questions that you would forget to ask. Mm. Like, I always think that with mum, like, I'm like, oh, there's so many questions I would love to have asked her. Mm. But, you know, if you have, I suppose you can kind of, if you are like, oh, we're having a living funeral, let me write down all the questions that I need answers to.
It's actually not the first time I died. It's the second, but the first was a technicality in that, as doctors, you have to fill out death certificates.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty confusing to do it. And I remember in the first death certificate I filled it all out. It was for a chap who died, fairly elderly.
Mm.
It wasn't a controversial certificate in any way.
Mm.
And then driving home, it was, I think, that evening, I had a phone call from a number I didn't recognise, and it was the local pathologist. I thought it was a bit odd. And he said, are you Matt Morgan? I said, yes. He said, I've got some bad news. You're dead. And I filled out my name in the wrong box, so I'd certified myself as being dead, which is a bit awkward.
That's where it all started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although it's not as bad as a friend of mine, an author called Benji Waterhouse, written a great book He's a psychiatrist. He's also sectioned himself, actually, by filling out the wrong box.
Wow.
So that's
what happens then? How can you, like,
I love this. Doctor
kill
mistakes
yourself.
That kill you or send you into some kind of mental institution. Do you think that's where your existential crisis started and you thought, I now have to write a book about this?
Maybe that's it.
Is there one particular... Obviously, we talked about the freezing, but... the guy who froze on a mountain. But is there one particular story in the book that you're either proud of or like that's really stuck with you in your daily life?
Yeah, I guess there's one. There's a chap called Reese. Reese was an international rugby player. He played for Wales. I saw him play against France in the beautiful Millennium Stadium back in the late 90s. And he was literally top of his game, super fit guy from South Africa originally. But Reese had a series of big heart attacks through lots of different means, really. So much so, he needed a special pump, which is called an LVAD, a left ventricular assist device. So this is something that replaces the pumping of your heart. He has to wear this 24 hours a day with a battery pack. He's got no heartbeat. So you feel his pulse, there's no heartbeat there.
Wow.
He's now the longest surviving patient with one of these LVADs, 12 years. He's been waiting for a transplant. But... when this happened, Reese went from being a super fit sports star to being able to do nothing. And he made a load of bad life choices in that time. He would often wake up in a police cell after drugs and alcohol with the battery on this device beeping, you know, and with minutes left to change the battery. And if the device died, you know, Reese would die. And I think the amazing thing about Reese's story, you know, he's now in a different place. You know, he's found breathwork, he's found mentorship, he's started a charity, he's done some amazing things. But for me, what that taught me is a lot about mistakes or choices. You know, I meet a lot of people in ICU who are there through bad choice, but actually, we all do the same things. You know, I've driven too fast, I've drunk too much, I've said things that I don't mean. But by luck, I wasn't critically ill. I didn't crash the car. And that person in bed three who did all those things and did crash the car and killed somebody or nearly killed themselves, they had, often it's just moral luck. And so Reese's message really is that you are not your worst mistake. And the time to make up your mind about somebody is probably never, actually. Certainly not at those moments. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of power in his story about redemption, really.
Well, there you go. You are not your worst mistake. Thank you so much for
I've learned so much.
I feel like we've had so many like questions answered.
Yeah. And so we didn't questions. Even ask them. So it's amazing.
No, it's crazy. But thank you so much for talking to
us.
And
I think we're going to a break, is that right, Yaz?
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
See
you in a bit.
Have a good day.
Have a good day. Bye.
Food Bar Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
But it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed. All the OGs had gone and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23. And was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Mr. Later Williams, hello. Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair. But listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly. It won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got to it, I was like, whoa, like there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
I am joined now by Ricardo Mighty. He is the CEO of Mighty Labs.
I just think if you're going to get into crypto, you just can't think short term. If you're trying to, I don't know, like pay your bills next month and you think I'm going to invest in crypto this month and then I'm going to take the gains out and do something with, you just can't think like that, because 99.9% of the time, the market doesn't work the way you want it to work. It works how it's going to work. The longer you have your investment in crypto, most likely the better it will do.
Business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
What a lovely, lovely guy.
He's so lovely and also just very insightful. I feel like we had questions asked and questions answered. See, uh-huh. I really am having a bit of a brain foggy moment today.
It's my day.
That's okay. We're clunky today. We're That's fine. All right.
It was just so interesting, and also just a very soothing voice. I feel like I
want him to read like bedtime stories, you know, like Stephen Fry does.
Yes.
Yeah, like yes. He would totally be like a really good person. Maybe he should read his book. He should do the audiobook. We should say that to him. Matt, you should do your own audiobook. Do that.
100%. 100%.
Okay.
We're here for it.
Well, gosh. There's just, do you know what it's time for?
No, what the game?
It's time for me to take control. Never have I felt this much power in all my life.
Do it.
Okay, we're gonna play a game, and I am not going to have to...
You may have heard of this game or seen it on TikTok.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a game that you can lose, really, Becky, so...
So I've won.
Yeah, so you've kind of already won. But we're going to play a blind ranking situation. So, a blind ranking game. Yeah. I don't know why I called it a situation, but you're going to have 10 things... that Becky has not seen. You are going to rank them 1 to 10. 1 being the best, 10 being the worst. I'm going to not tell you what's coming. You're just going to have to decide in the moment.
And I can't use up the number that I've already used up.
No, I'm going to be writing them down.
Okay, I've got them
and
as
it
well.
could get embarrassing because okay. It's 10 things, blind ranking, 10 things to have at your funeral. So
okay.
This could be a deep one because if this is wrong, then your funeral's going to suck.
No one's going to want to be there.
Okay. Number one. So 1 to 10.
Yeah, go.
You have to decide where
it
is.
Yeah. Move on.
A taco truck serving food. Where would you like that on the scale? 1 to 10. Would you like a taco truck?
Wait.
I love tacos. 1 to 10.
So 1 is like I don't really want it, right?
No, 1 is good.
I want it.
Right?
I really want it. Oh, sorry. Probably like a 9.
Like a 9? Oh, you really don't want that. Okay. Okay. Next one. A flash mob of your favorite dance moves.
10.
10. Oh, you don't want the flash mob. Jeez. Okay.
No.
A live band playing.
1.
Number 1.
Actually,
yeah.
It's not my wedding, is it?
It's not your wedding, but it's your funeral. You do what you want,
babe. Live band. Can I move to 3?
Yeah. Locked in. Okay.
Yeah.
No more moving. Right. A roast battle with your closest friends telling the most embarrassing stories about you.
1.
I kind of love that.
It's I feel like there'll be giggles and
I mean,
stuff.
I personally would say no, but that's fine. A giant inflatable of you placed on top of the casket.
I don't think that's my vibe.
You have an 8. You can go for 8.
I think an 8.
That's the lowest we can go.
Can you see me having that? No.
A professional magician performs tricks as a tribute to your life. I want that.
God,
as
I should have moved the taco truck. 7.
It's getting worse. Everyone is required to wear matching outfits with a giant I heart Becky.
Oh, actually, number 2.
Shirt.
Number 2. There's so much love.
That's great. So I love that. Everyone gets to wear matching shirt. What color is the shirt? Are they all wearing the same color? What color are you going to choose?
Shirt. I think. Pink.
Nice pink shirts. Your ashes are shot out of a cannon during the service.
That is amazing.
I don't know.
It would be like one of those party poppers.
No, but you don't want them, not like, it would be like, well, you couldn't have them like, oh God, I don't
That'd
even
be
know.
Amazing. Was everyone walking under them or what's... I don't know.
Like, not like a confetti cannon.
That's how I'm picturing
it. No, I'm imagining it more like a cannonball, like into the sea or something.
Into the sea.
It can't go over people. You don't want all your ashes over people.
It can. I'll be with them forever.
Oh, God. Get it in the eyes, though, and the hair. You'll never get
out. So what numbers have I got left?
Okay, you've got four.
Five and six.
Five and six.
Right, six.
Six it is. Okay, a heartfelt video montage with touching speeches for your closest friends and family.
Well, that should have been number one, but...
would you like that as number four?
They're
going
to have to roast me, so they roast me and then they can do that,
number four.
Would
you like that as number four?
Yeah, number four.
And then finally, a karaoke session where your favourite songs are sung by strangers in the crowd.
Oh, fuck, that should be number one.
But I think that's good. So should we say what you're... So number one, you're having a roast battle with your closest friends telling the most embarrassing stories about you. Then everyone is required to wear pink I Heart Becky t-shirts.
Yeah.
A live band will be playing. A heartfelt video montage of touching speeches with your closest friends and family.
Oh, and the live band can play while that's happening.
Yeah, and then you can have a karaoke. You can have live band karaoke.
Live band karaoke. It's brilliant that they're in the middle. Yeah.
We won't talk about the five at the end because they're not interesting.
That was fun.
I know, right?
That's a great funeral. Who's coming?
I want to come. We're going to have a living one, right?
Pardon?
We're not having a living funeral?
Well, yeah, we are, but we're having a joint one, remember?
Yeah, we are having a joint one. We are actually going to have a joint one at some point. I did. What's the word? What's that word? Oh, God, today.
Today your brain
is not working.
Anyway, I want to know, Tasha, do you feel like, you know, you've learnt what?
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
Did you have something else to say?
No.
I'm taking over.
Please.
I'm like regaining it. Control.
I love it.
What do you think you've learned, like, from speaking to me today and also to Dr. Matt Morgan? Because I think we talk a lot and we don't necessarily reflect.
Okay, here we go. Here's some reflection for you.
Can you reflect for me, please?
I can reflect. I would say, I might...
do you want a moment?
I might read you a little bit.
What are you going
to
read me?
Would you like that? Would you like me to psychoanalyze you for a second?
Oh my God, she's doing it. Am I in the mental space? Yes,
no,
I am.
No. Good. I would just say that I wish you would be kinder to yourself and give yourself more patience because you are doing such a good job at existing and living life. And sorry, I know this is, it's fine. It's going to be fine, but you're doing great. You work really, really hard. You're a kind person. You are friends to all of your friends. They all still love you, even if you need 5 minutes off. You do this. You do music. You are on it. All pistons are firing, okay? All the time. And I just want you to know that you're allowed to have months, years of chill. And it's fine. And I just hope you know that you are brilliant in all of those aspects, no matter how you're feeling on the day. So I think this is what you would say to me.
It is.
I think your dad would be super duper proud of you for everything that you're doing all the time. I think that what we're doing here is really important, and we have to remember that it's also sensitive to us, and we have to give ourselves kindness for that. Of course we're going to feel sad sometimes. I think that I couldn't do this without you.
No, I couldn't do this
genuinely.
Without you.
Like, genuinely, like, because, I mean, we've spoken about this before, but, like, I can do all the chat, right? I can't do the math. You can do the math. You're good at talking to people.
No,
but I don't mean the math like the math. I mean like the logistics. You can do all the things where you're like, no, this, you can see it in your head and you go, this can be a reality, Tash. Like, this doesn't have to be some kind of pretend thing that we do. This is a reality. This is a real thing. You are more than capable of doing this. And I think you don't know that about yourself, that you dream so big and you make all those things absolutely real. And I think that you're brilliant. And I hope that even though you're going through this bit of like a tricky, sticky moment, you know that there'll be light at the end of the tunnel and life is going to be
the sweetest thing anyone's ever said. Thank you. Well, I actually think I needed to hear that. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad I can be here.
Need to stop being so hard on myself. But yeah.
And we have to also, we have to let life do its thing. Sometimes it's going to throw us some hard days. And also I think kind of finding the finding the funny and finding the joy in all of that rubbish is really good. But it's also really important that you lie down in the dark. And that's okay.
I know, without feeling guilty. I think that's the biggest thing.
Oh,
I
don't my gosh.
Guilt. Constant
no, because we. I tell you why. You want to know why? We've got a minute left and I will tell you why. We have, producer Yaz is like, yes, Tash, do it quickly. We have been, our generation are completely consumed by the fact that we watch social media constantly of how everyone else is living these perfect lives.
Be productive.
No one is doing that. I promise you. They're all staged. It's all bullshit. No one is waking up at 5 a.m. and, you know, all of this crap, right? And we are so, so...
conditioned to
do
that,
And thus, guilt is invited in. Mm. And I would just say to anyone who's struggling with that, perfection is not reality. You are brilliant. You are going to be fine. And
hype woman. Huh? You're such a hype woman.
And life is life. So
and now we have to
peace
go.
Out, friends.
Love you. See you next week.
Bye.